One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to our Wednesday edition of the program. I'm Zach Genser, your host. You're listening to the Creative City Show, where daily, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., we talk about the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting Tucson there. A happy day after Election Day in Tucson. We're going to get to that a little bit later in the hour. I have Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star coming in the back half of the hour. He and I were talking about his view of Tucson as what he calls the streetcar corridor of Tucson, of some progressive politics, often louder voice, most active, and then kind of the broader Tucson liberalism, broader Tucson progressivism. And I think Proposition 205, which got slapped down by the voters yesterday, is an interesting picture of that. And so I wanted to get Tim Steller on to talk about a brief review of the election and what the decision on 205 might say for Tucson politics going forward, and his thoughts the morning after our elections here in Tucson, where we picked three council seats or reelected and a new mayor. So we'll cover all that at 9:35 here, five after the bottom of the hour. But to kick us off today is Fletcher McCusker in studio, named Ed Dennison Business Leader of the Year for 2019 by the Arizona Technology Council and the Arizona Commerce Authority as part of the Governor's Celebration of Innovation Awards. And so I wanted Mr. McCusker to come in. We'll talk about what he's up to in the city, what's going on in Tucson, and the reason for getting this award. Fletcher, thanks for being in studio. Good to have you again.
Good morning. Nice rainy day. It was hailing at my house.
That's what I heard. I live just down the street from Caterpillar. We got a little bit of rain, but not the hail and thunder and lightning I was hearing from other parts of the city. So
yeah, I think that was pretty much central.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, congratulations on this award. As I said in the promo, if there's something shaking and happening in Tucson, Fletcher McCusker seems to be somewhat around it. You've been a successful entrepreneur yourself. You are now one of the leaders of UA Venture Capital, which is funding tech transferred ideas out of the university. And also many know you as the chair of the Rio Nuevo board. What was the sense of why you were named Business Leader of the Year here for 2019?
Well, four Tucsonans received awards that night. And I think, Zach, it's reflective about all of that is interestingly interconnected. The vibrancy of our downtown, the attractiveness we're beginning to see with millennial inventors, millennial-led companies, the innovation that's coming out of the university due in large part to President Robbins' new strategic mission and their focused intent to commercialize their research. And, you know, we just happen to be in the right place at the right time. But those awards typically go to Phoenicians and people from Maricopa County. So Dr. Jim Wyant, who's the founder of our optical college, was recognized for a Lifetime Achievement Award. There's my award. Free Fall Cellular, which is a U of A spin-out, was recognized as the most innovative startup. And then Dr. Louise Hecker, was a U of A professor, researcher, was identified as the Academic Innovator of the Year. So Tucson swept these awards. And I can't imagine a time when that's happened before. And I think it's indicative of how the state, but moreover, how all of us that are in the innovation ecosystem begin to see the rising up of Tucson in this innovation space. And I think that that whole evening reflected, what's going on down here.
One of the things that I've said on the air that seems to have taken off, and I want to talk about it more in our second segment together, is Tucson is a town that likes to talk about its tacos and trails more than its tech and talent. And I said that, and it just kind of took off. People have said there's something there. And for sure, when it comes to Tucson, we often feel like Arizona is a one-city state. I hear that a lot as well. But I also sometimes push back on what I feel is cheerleading, of just trying to hype up what's going on. What's that balance of this is what's going really well? Here's the things we need to work on. You've been in the thick of it. Tell us about what's really starting to click in Tucson from a real nuts and bolts perspective.
A couple of things, and you want other people to be telling the story, not us. You know, we don't necessarily all want to be on Saturday Night Live, but you know, the U of A got what it wanted when it tweaked its brand. But I think USA Today or Bloomberg maybe released a story where Tucson and Austin, Texas, were the two cities with the highest increase in tech jobs. You know, we're seeing Tucson, you know, the innovation community really stir interest. And you really want other people to start talking about this, not us constantly hyping it. And I think you're beginning to see that. I think we're on the radar. You know, Caterpillar helped us do that. Hexagon Mining, if you're following that story, this is now their world headquarters for their mining division. They're taking another floor of space downtown, and you know, with Amazon in town, you know, we're just in the news a lot as something that maybe what Austin might have looked like 10 years ago. So I think there's a lot of interest in tech. You know, Raytheon's unbelievable expansion. We have engineers now and married engineered couples, you know, moving to Tucson, and I think we've really begun to establish ourselves as a tech city.
In 2017, you and your partner launched UA Venture Capital, a venture capital fund for UA-related tech companies. You so are invested in, the latest number I saw was 7 local startups. Is it more than 7?
It's actually 13 now. Seven in our second fund.
Okay.
Our first fund was launched in February of 18, and we invested in 5 companies in that fund. So we will announce our 13th investment, Zach, in U of A-led science this week. And these are research-driven projects that, except for some growth capital, they probably would have otherwise been shelved. And it's we're agnostic. It's not all tech. It's not all medical. It's not all pharmaceutical. But it's unbelievably robust right now at the U of A.
Are there sectors that you're seeing that seem to have the most kind of wind in the sails right now from both an investment standpoint and just product to market?
Sure. It's the things that the U of A excels in. It's optical science. It's mining. It's IT. It's pharmaceutical. It's biomedical. You know, President Robbins made an interesting comment to me not too long ago. He said, you know, Stanford's top 5 university, but they're not number 1 in anything. University of Arizona is number 1 in several corridors. Optics is one of those. Mining is one of those. You know, so we're focused our energy in places where we excel. We're seeing unbelievable innovation in optical science and also in the pharmaceutical space. You know, and all that's coming from young researchers at the U of A who want to see their products get to market.
We are in studio with Fletcher McCusker, named this fall as the 2019 Ed Dennison Business Leader of the Year by the Arizona Technology Council and the Arizona Commerce Authority. And so we wanted to have him in to talk about that. And here, you know, on election day morning after, when we come back from this short break, I want to talk with Fletcher about what are the next 4 years look like, and not in the sense of politics, but what do we need to be pushing harder on? What are the gaps and opportunities to continue this momentum? We'll be back with Fletcher McCusker to talk about all of this and the growth and development happening in Tucson. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome on back into the Creative City Show. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. We're sitting down with Fletcher McCusker, the Business Leader of the Year, as named by the Arizona Commerce Authority here. And so we took the opportunity to talk about what's going on in terms of enterprise, entrepreneurship, creativity, innovation, technology in Tucson. But first, I want to quickly welcome a new sponsor of the show, the Talent Store, run by local talent strategist Devin Underwood. So congratulations. you're running a successful business, whether you're big or small, you're growing, and it's time to bring on the right talent to continue your success. Here's the thing. It takes a certain skill and focus to attract, recruit, and discover just the person you're looking for. Whether you need an executive, are filling a key role, or have multiple positions to fill, do the right thing and hand this process off to the Talent Store. The Talent Store, run by Devin Underwood, can do it all, working on your behalf, giving you the time and talent to run your business. Here's what Kendall, a director of business development at a local startup, had to say. I can assure Devin will bring to light a strong trait of the potential new hire and why they're needed on the staff. She is impeccable. Her intention to detail is, I would recommend the Talent Store to my entire network, or at least whoever we both don't already know. Again, says Kendall, director of business development for a local startup. We're excited to welcome the Talent Store as a sponsor partner of the Creative City Show. Speaking of talent, Fletcher McCusker, does all of this momentum that you're speaking about help to close the talent retention gap that we've struggled with so often here in Tucson?
We think so, and we're beginning to see signs of that. You know, young people sticking around, people coming back. I've said before, maybe we're not the city where we want every graduate to stay, but we are the city where we want every graduate to come back to. I think we're seeing a lot of interest now in, startup environment that's almost all millennial. The engineering, inbound engineering, thousands of new engineers have moved to Tucson. Thousands, literally thousands. I think somewhere in the 4,000, 5,000 range. These are high-paying professionals. They create an ecosystem, and they create other employment opportunities. And we'll begin to see spin-outs from Caterpillar and Raytheon and Hexagon, So I think, we're beginning to see that. The co-working spaces are doing well. We were worried when Connect closed, but several have sprung up around that, to fill that void. So I think we're doing okay.
As a business leader of the year, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Tucson as a business-friendly city? And what would you like to see over the next 5 or 10 years for Tucson in that sense?
There's two answers to that question. One's in terms of, I think, how people perceive us as a business-friendly city. That's not very good. You'd probably give us a 6 or a 7. But in terms of how we really operate toward business, we're probably more a 7, 8 and improving. We have a damaged reputation. If you read the Republic this morning, their slant on the defeat of 205 is very different than the way we reported it. Tucson, this liberal bastion in our state, somehow found the will to defeat this very liberal initiative. They can't help themselves. We're viewed as a liberal island in a Republican sea. And I'm in a very unique position in that, because the Rio Nuevo board is entirely Republican. The city council is entirely Democrat, and I report to a Republican legislature. So hopefully we'll get further and further away from partisan politics. And ultimately, I think that will make us a more friendly and more business capable city.
I'm going to talk to Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star about a lot of this in the second half of the hour as a debrief on last night's results. But as the chair of the Rio Nuevo board, as someone who's been an entrepreneur, as someone who is supporting the entrepreneurial ecosystem, what is one gap that you'd love to see us close in Tucson in terms of both business friendliness and also an eye on our entrepreneurship ecosystem?
The advantage that Rio Nuevo has enjoyed is an exemption from the Arizona gift clause. And every community around us, every state around us, uses incentives to attract business, to retain businesses and attract businesses. Arizona can't do that because of this constitutional clause. And I think it makes us less competitive. We lose out to Denver. We lose out to Reno. We lose out to Huntsville, Alabama. We lose out to Austin, Texas. So the challenge is to come to grips with the ideology around incentives and, not to go crazy with them, but not to forbid them either. And I think that this balance is going to have to be reached with this new administration.
Yeah, I've seen that. Like you, I'm in a lot of different parts of the the community. And I think that idea of incentives, what is that balance? I think that conversation is going to certainly be at the forefront of, I think, the new mayoral administration, of the new city council, and you've given a kind of a view of how you hope to see balance in that, as I'm hearing.
Yeah, and I think that's going to determine the outcome of how people view us as business friendly or not. Can we continue to attract and incentivize businesses? Can we compete with Denver? Can we compete with, Phoenix? Can we, be competitive in our own space? A lot of that's going to require us to really promote the community and in spite sometimes of how we're viewed externally. Our education reputation hurts us. I mean, eventually, I think, we've seen people literally not come to Tucson because they've Googled the school systems. And, that's getting better, but, that's still a challenge to our reputation. And I'm thrilled for Rahina. I mean, she's the only Latina mayor in the entire United States.
Right.
And we have a real opportunity to embrace our culture, to really differentiate ourselves from Phoenix. I think we can be to Phoenix what Austin is to Dallas and be much more hip, liberal about music, food, entertainment. And you know what that attracts? That attracts really cool business leaders. And I think we can do that. And I'm committed to doing that.
And you're very much in the branding game. Visit Tucson has developed a Free Yourself brand. The University of Arizona is working on some branding. Certainly the renewal of Rio Nuevo into the 2030s was based on the state seeing Rio Nuevo manage funds here in kind of Rio Nuevo 3.0 better than the past two versions. Is Tucson developing a cohesive brand? Do you think when people think about Tucson, they're starting to get a better picture of what it is and could be, or is that still murky in your mind?
I think it is murky. There's a lot of people telling different stories. One of the changes is there are a lot of people telling positive stories. We have historically been our own worst enemy. And, when Caterpillar was relocating here, and the internet topics about Tucson were terrible. It was about potholes and crime and education. And, the questions were, why would anybody want to live there? So I think we learned a lot from that. And organizations like Sun Corridor, Visit Tucson, and others that promote us now have a much more positive vibe about how they talk about Tucson. And moreover, things like 10 West, that just ran through a couple weeks ago, 16,000 people attended that. The Jazz Festival in January now, last year, 22,000 people came to that. 65% of them were from out of town. So the more we become attractive to people, the more we let, again, other people tell our story, I think the more that Tucson has an opportunity to grow. The challenge is we don't want to be Atlanta. We don't want to be Austin. We don't want to be San Diego. Mm-hmm. We certainly don't want to be Phoenix. So how do you keep the edge and at the same time prosper? And that's the challenge I think all of us have.
What's something that you're personally working on through some of your roles to do just that, to keep the edge, but take, turn the next chapter?
We're really looking forward to how downtown evolves around food and music. So you probably know we just committed almost $70 million finally to the renovation of our TCC. We've said publicly we think that has an opportunity to become a Lincoln Center-like environment that's attractive to all sorts of entertainment, both the production and a fan base. The Dusk Festival has turned out to be a huge, diversified event in our downtown. I'd like to see the Mariachi Festival come back to Tucson. The Day of the Dead just had, I think, 150,000 participants in that. So we have this really unique blend of cultures, and I think it's really an opportunity for us to differentiate ourselves from any other community in the Southwest. Ultimately, that attracts more than just tourists. It attracts people that want to live here, and it attracts companies that want to be based here and participate in that kind of diversified activities.
Well, Fletcher McCusker, thank you for spending some time with us this morning here on post-election day morning. And the Give me a little bit of a taste as we have about one and a half minutes. What's one of the startups that you're... Well, let me back up. I'm going to go about 30,000 feet instead. I want to ask you a debate that Tucson is having. Get your view. I've heard we've got great ideas out of our technology, but not enough funding to support it. Some say we've got enough funding, but not enough good, qualified ideas. Where does Fletcher McCusker...
I am intimately involved in that, and I can tell you we have no shortage of product. Hundreds, if not thousands, of patents at this university. What we indeed have is a shortage of capital.
So everyone that I have, I asked Mara Aspinall the same question with Bluestone Venture Partners, and it was the same answer. We've got ideas, not enough investment. So right. Fletcher McCusker, Business Leader of the Year 2019 at a statewide level, appreciative of your work with U of A Venture Capital to start kind of filling the gap on that. We'll do this again, have more conversation. Congratulations on your recognition, and thanks for what you do for Tucson.
Jack, thanks.
We'll be right back after bottom of the hour news. When we come back, Tim Steller will be on the air from the Arizona Daily Star to debrief a little bit of yesterday's election results. Specifically, what do they say? What do they mean for the next 4 years? We'll have all that for you when we come back from the break, so don't go far. 790-2040 is your Liveline opportunity to jump on in this conversation and engage with us. You're listening to the Creative City Show on 1030 The Voice. We'll return in a minute. Tucson, welcome on back into the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. We talk about the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future and envision, debate, and discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting there. Happy day after election. And to help us debrief, I actually messaged our next guest yesterday evening and said, hey, we've had some conversation about Tucson politics and geography and voice and who is loudest and who is not. What does it mean for Tucson politics and issues? It'd be a really relevant conversation to have on the air. Could we do it? And Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star said yes, let's go ahead. And so I'm looking forward to having Tim on for the next few minutes to start debriefing what happened last night. I'm going to welcome Tim in, and then we'll get to a quick caller and jump right in. Tim, I appreciate you calling in today.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
Yeah,
excited to talk about it.
Yes, for sure. I want to get to our caller here and respect their time real fast. Susie, you called 790-2040 here on The Voice. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Zach, and also Tim. Tim knows me. I've left him many a comment. I'm old enough to know that a newspaper should always have a picture of both the new incumbent or the winner and the loser party. There's no picture of that Ackerley group. What is that about? I've never heard. I'm from Denver, but I don't think that's that. I've read many a newspaper, Orange County Register, Austin American Statesman. I've read many a newspaper, even in D.C. We lived in D.C. for 6 months. I've never heard of a newspaper not putting a picture of both sides. Granted, they lost, but they're still standing around at a party.
Thanks, Susie. I appreciate your question. Tim, any initial thoughts on that or too early to...
On that, I don't know anything. I mean, that may be generally true. It doesn't strike me as the most important thing in our coverage, but yeah, sure. I mean, as she said, people standing around at a party. Well, yeah, I mean, that kind of answers the question right there as to why it wouldn't necessarily be, you know, top priority. But sure, I mean, I guess it just doesn't strike me as that important, but maybe it is to some people.
Thanks, Susie, for your call. 790-2040 is our live line. Tim, our time is just running fast as it always is. You have an interesting view of the geography of the city and what it means for the political conversation and narrative. Do you mind sharing what you've seen over your time in journalism here in Tucson? And then we'll get into results and especially 205 as it pertains to what we can expect going forward. But tell me about how you've come to view the city in terms of our political narrative.
Well, I think what you're referring to is when I talked about the streetcar corridor. That's a phrase I just used to kind of stand in for the progressive, much of progressive Tucson in terms of its politics. It's not literally true that progressives are all in this, you know, around the streetcar, but to some extent that's the case. And I think often we misunderstand the nature of the city as a whole by focusing too much on the concerns and points of view of people in the streetcar corridor. Now, I write a lot about downtown. I work a lot downtown. I'm guilty of it too. But the fact is, you know, this city grew out by lots of square miles after World War II, miles and miles eastward. And there's just this vast acreage of, you know, apartment buildings and single family homes that are not necessarily, you know, affiliated with what you might call university progressivism or that sort of thing. So I guess when we talked about it before, I was trying to think of Prop 205 in those terms. My question to myself before this was, is it just something, an issue of the streetcar corridor, so to speak, or is it something that's going to have more broad appeal across Tucson? Obviously, we found out last night. I don't know if it was the streetcar corridor, as I named it, but certainly it didn't have, the initiative didn't have broad appeal.
And we're talking about Proposition 205, known as Sanctuary City Initiative. It was resoundingly defeated by the Tucson voters. 71% to 29% said no on 205. I just had Fletcher McCusker on the air, Tim Steller, and he said that the Arizona Republic wrote an article about that defeat, and they had a very different perspective. There's almost a view north of the Gila that Tucson is just this, you know, deep blue bastion. In reality, you kind of argue that Tucson is a little bit more diverse politically, with a median point around Jonathan Rothschild's politics. But as there's so much of that we lose sight of that, though, especially when it comes to issues like this. Do you think the Prop 205 result backs you up in that view, or that kind of that broad perspective on the city?
Yeah, I do think so. Now, in an alternate universe, Jonathan Rothschild might have come out in favor of Prop 205, and if you think of it in those terms, you know, maybe if the power structure would have supported it, they would have had a chance. Apparently, it didn't have a chance. We didn't know that going this way, but going along, but. You know, yeah, I do think Jonathan Rothschild is somewhere around the midpoint or the median point of Tucson politics. I mean, I don't like to think too much in a left-right spectrum because, as you know, there's a lot of other dimensions. It's not a single line. But to the extent you can do that, I would guess Jonathan Rothschild is somewhere near where most of Tucson is. And, you know, Regina Romero is probably left of that in some ways, but she's learned through the years. She's had 12 years on the council, and I just think that she's not. I'm reacting here to some of the catastrophizing from people on the right today. I just don't think she is going to be a disastrous mayor. First of all, the mayor doesn't have that much more power than a regular city council member. But second, yeah, she's learned a lot. She's not that far from a Jonathan Rothschild Democrat.
So that I'm glad you went there, because I wanted to speak to that and get your thoughts, Timothy Steller from the Arizona Daily Star. There's been a debate going on about what kind of administration that Regina Romero will run on a vote basis. She's voted pretty darn close to Jonathan Rothschild, and of course talked about that a lot on the campaign trail. But there's also some who are smarter than me that also have concerns that there might be kind of a chasing foul balls approach that could be taken, where certainly if you compare an Ackerley administration to a Regina Romero administration, you might assume that a Regina Romero administration might take on state and national issues to a greater degree, which I think Proposition 205 certainly represented. Do you think the Tucson City voters made a statement with Proposition 205 that we want kind of moderate center-left policies that focus on city-based issues? Do you think this is any kind of a referendum on the set of issues that Rahina may or may not have success tackling as mayor of Tucson?
I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, it could. You could see it as a warning shot. I mean, the example I often use is, you know, are we going to be doing declarations in favor of Palestinian nationhood or something like that at the city council level? And you know, feel how you feel about that issue. It's really not something that matters. That Tucson's city council should be digging into. So in that regard, I feel a little different. Now, my example is kind of extreme. I feel a little different about Prop 205. I do think it had local salience. I don't think they're wrong to say that this could have had some effect on the lives of undocumented residents of Tucson and their families. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be dealt with at the state. It will be dealt with at the state level anyway. And so, yes, I think you could view it as kind of Tucson refocusing on pragmatic issues of, well, let me put it this way. It's not that that's not pragmatic. It's very important. That is Prop 205, the sanctuary idea, is very important to those who live that reality. But it's not perhaps a core concern of the city. And I think that there's a lot of desire both to deal with our core concerns because we're a poor city with a lot of needs and not to get sidetracked. And I do think there's going to be a lot of pressure, like you say, not to chase what you call foul balls. When that happens, I'm sure there will be some hackles raised. But, you know, it happens anyway. It's not just Rahina Romero. I mean, this happens in right-leaning and left-leaning government bodies. So, you know, unless we see, like, core services, core issues being ignored, I won't be too worried if they're going out taking stands on issues that aren't of, you know, solely local concern.
And on that note, let's go to our final break of the hour. We have Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star on with us through 10. When we come back, we'll talk about the individual council races, what that reflects, what it means, and what Tim Steller thinks is ahead for the next 4 years for Tucson. It's our post-election debrief here on the Creative City Show. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to join the conversation. Let us know what you're seeing and hearing and thinking the morning after election 2019 in Tucson. We'll be right back. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to the 10:30 The Voice studio. You're listening to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. And we're doing, to wrap up our hour, a beginning debrief of the election results last night. Mayor-elect Rahina Romero defeated independent candidate Ed Ackerley. There were three city council races. And in the first part of my conversation with Tim Steller here on the air from the Arizona Daily Star, we talked about Proposition 205. And what it reflects about the city of Tucson, the voter base, the voter desires, what Tim Steller calls the streetcar corridor versus the broader electorate around the city of Tucson that has more of a median point around Jonathan Rothschild's policies. And Tim Steller and I talked about this a few weeks ago, and seeing the 71% of the voting electorate vote down Proposition 205, I thought it'd be great to have Tim on the air to talk about that, and we did. Let's move on to in this segment, though, some of the individual races. Tim, out there on the interwebs, I'm seeing a lot of people say that Ed Ackerley had a surprisingly good showing, getting about 40% of the voting number for an independent. Is that a good number? How would you rate that result for Ed Ackerley?
Well, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, the what is Tucson's electorate. I don't really think that surprising or particularly impressive, because I think Tucson's electorate is much more moderate and even conservative in some areas than people tend to think. So there's going to be a solid minority of Tucson voters who go for the non-Democrat, especially a moderate, well, I guess you'd call him a moderate conservative. You just call him a moderate, like Ackerley. I didn't make any bets on what the outcome would be, but that 40% sounds around right, you know. If he had been a Republican, it's interesting to imagine that. What would have happened if he were a Republican? Would he have won more votes or less? I think that he would have had a lot. He would have had an easier time getting started on his campaign, but perhaps won around the same amount, because after all, he is the same person.
Yeah, and that was the question I was asking. Is, I guess the caveat was, for an independent candidate, for someone with an I next to their name, that was a very good showing. Would you agree with that piece, that for an independent, that was a good showing?
I'm still not positive that I would think so. I think, I think it's about what to expect from a mainstream kind of pro-business moderate like that. I mean, for maybe he slightly outperformed expectations, but, 40% isn't really close to winning at all. So, I think there's a hot, solid core of, what, a third of Tucson voters who are always going to vote for the non-Democrat. Maybe he took up an extra 7% of the vote. I'm just throwing out numbers here, but I don't find it as impressive as it sounds like you do.
I asked Ed Ackerley about this when I had him in for my last interview before the general. He always impressed me as someone who had a broad understanding of a wide array of issues. Certainly did his research throughout this year, and I found that when he got into the general, it seemed to me that he really narrowed in on a message around core city services. Do you think the result of this election is any kind of a referendum around how Tucson feels about the importance of that and what they want to see out of city council, or not so much?
Yeah, I wouldn't say so, because obviously the guy who focused on core city services lost badly. So, I think to say that he is focused on that, but the others weren't, would be a little bit wrong. He was more focused on that in his campaign, that's for sure. But I wasn't as impressed, perhaps, as you were, because I felt like he was saying, for example, we really just need to sit down and solve some of these problems without the bickering or what have you. For me, that showed some naivete about the process. These people are trying to solve these problems all the time. It's not for lack of trying. There's a lot of different reasons that people that certain problems don't get solved. It's not just not like realizing it's a problem. I wasn't as impressed with Ackerley's campaign as it sounds like you were. I mean, what I find interesting is that he represents what is a long tradition of business moderate mayoral candidates. So we had Walkup for 12 years. We had Walkup. We had Lou Murphy. I'm trying to think. There's another one that I'm forgetting. And what did those guys have? They had a party backing them. They had chamber support. They had a business community support in general. Ed Ackerley did not have, he had some party support from the Republicans, certainly, but he didn't, he had to work hard just to get on the ballot or just to get his $10 donations, as he said several times, which isn't something that you have when you're a candidate with an organization behind you. So I guess maybe I'm coming around a little to your point that it is somewhat impressive that he was able to pick up what he got vote-wise, but I think that his focus on core services is not that innovative or surprising. That's my point of view.
We're with Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star debriefing some of the initial results from yesterday's election 2019. If we don't get to another of the city council races, Tim Steller, I think there's some significant elements of the Ward 1 race, and that is while none of the Republican candidates in the three council races got above 40% of the vote, are you surprised for as much of a newcomer as Sam Nagy was that he performed the way he did in a citywide election?
Well, let me see. I can't remember what percent did he get of the vote.
I think he was in the high 30s. I think he had around 35,000 votes in the city. I can pull that up real quick.
So I'm sorry I didn't focus really closely on that race. My impression of him was that he was probably the best of the Republican candidates, and so perhaps has a future. You know, it's a tough city for a Republican to win in, obviously, but I think he has more of a future probably than the other two losing Republican candidates, in the sense that, you know, he showed familiarity with the issues and he doesn't have a past that may turn some people off, as in the case of Michael Hicks. So, yeah, I mean, I think there could be something said for him. Sure.
Yeah, and I have the number specifically. Sam Nagy brought in 31,550 votes on the unofficial clerk's recording. That was about 37% of the vote, and that was higher than Ewart Williams got in the Ward 2 race, and that was right about what Michael Hicks got in the Ward 4 race. So, just interesting. I think to see the citywide turnout for some very new candidates. I mean, Williams and Nagy were completely new on the scene, while Michael Hicks was a bit more of a known entity. The votership on the Republican side came around those candidates as strong as you might expect Republicans to do so.
Yeah, and you know what I really want to know, as we have checked every year, is how did they do in their wards? How did Michael Hicks or Nikki Lee win their ward? Did Paul Cunningham or Ewart Williams win their ward? I've taken a stand in favor of ward only elections many times over the years, and I don't think it's right if a ward wants one candidate, but the city essentially overrules, city's voters overrule their selection. On the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I'm really interested to see how good, because that was Hicks versus Lee, because Hicks is a known character, obviously, so he has name recognition. But Lee is an impressive person, perhaps the most impressive of the council candidates, in my opinion. And I mean, the new ones, so the five, you know, who are just coming onto the scene. And so I'm really interested to see if she was able to win the ward itself. That would be impressive.
Yeah, and I haven't seen those numbers quite yet myself, so that will be interesting in the days to come.
Yeah, I mean, if the city council, the all Democratic city council with a Democratic, more left leaning mayor, screws things up, I mean, I gotta think there's going to be a backlash at some point, because you know, we're recovering now still from our both the recession and then the sequestration problem. But, you know, if they start, as you say, chasing foul balls and things start getting worse again while they're distracted, then I've got to think there will be a backlash somehow.
So that's how I wanted to end, Tim Steller. I appreciate you going there. We've got about 2 minutes left, but wanted to get your initial kind of predictions over the next 4 years in terms of Lane Santa Cruz is now in the Ward 1 seat. I would argue that she's even a little bit more left philosophically than Regina Romero. Regina Romero, who's a little bit more left of center than I think the other moderate members of the council, is now in the mayor's seat. Not a major, major swing left, but a more left council than it has been. Any predictions or thoughts about what that means for Tucson policy in the next 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've really got to watch out for getting bogged down, as you say. I think that the you know, the public safety needs are something that, you know, if they don't focus on that,
agreed,
there's something really wrong. That's what people care about, maybe more than any other city service. And if you're, you know, worried about bicycle infrastructure to the exclusion of public safety, then you're not doing the job right. So I think we have to watch out for that. Now, you could look at Lane Santa or Regina Romero maybe as almost like Lane Santa Cruz, but with experience, you know, so you could see, I expect we will see Santa Cruz, evolve in the job. Regina Romero wasn't that impressive when she started as a council member, but she became much, much, much more impressive with experience. So that can happen with anyone. And they can also surprise us on the bad side. So I'm just hoping that they are able to continue to focus on the things that matter most, like, as I said, public safety, while also, you know, I'm cool with planting a million trees if we can do that well and, you know, improving bike infrastructure. I think that's wonderful. But we also have to do these other things. And if we get distracted from them, that's a problem.
And that's where we're in. That's a good note to end on. Tim Steller, writer for the Arizona Daily Star, thanks for spending this half hour with us debriefing election results from last night. I appreciate you, and we'll do this again soon.
Hey, thanks, Zach.
Tucson, that's it for our Wednesday show. Thursday at 9, tomorrow, we'll be back to do more of this, talking about the issues shaping Tucson's future. See you then.